and 15. Ray has a tip, and it's Simone Lawrence again! Exclamation point! Touchdown! Second and 10. Was only flushed. Throwing deep. Man open, and it's a touchdown! Andy Vantuz plays the ricochet off the hands of Isaiah Green. Second down, a pump from Mazzoli, and he's got Biggs in the corner. Touchdown! Speedy B as Mazzoli with the pump and go is on target. Now looks for Owens. End zone! Touchdown! Chad Owens! And that might be as sweet a touchdown as he's ever caught.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Hey, Mike. So remember last week when we opened the show talking about that fantasy league we're in with other CFL podcasts?
Yep.
So we had our first game this week, obviously, because it was week one of the CFL season. We took on Ryan Ballantyne of the CFL Horsemen. And we saw, and we kicked his ass. We won that game by a score of 214-127. An absolute demolishing for the CFL Horsemen at the hands of Podski Wee Wee. Pat yourself on the back. I know you don't really have much to do with the league, but this is our team. This is not my team. This is our team. We're co-hosts here. You deserve kudos, too. Big week one win for us in fantasy.
Yeah, big win. I didn't get a win in our league, but that's okay. Hey, at least we got the one win in the other league.
That's just it. If we keep winning in this other league, we'll have podcasting bragging rights. And that might be just as important, if not more important, because we can hold it over a bunch of people in the world. Like, all these people that are in this league, we can hold over when we crush them. So our next game will be against the guys from the Two and Out CFL podcast. Now, this is a show hosted by John Frazier and Travis Kura. Their shows, it's more of a league show, and it's actually really focused on fantasy football. They started as a fantasy football podcast. And, you know, just like our show, you know, it morphs and it moves, and you don't really know what it is, and then you kind of get a feel for everything. They do talk a lot about non-fantasy stuff as well, but their primary focus is fantasy. So we're playing a fantasy game against a guy who hosts a fantasy podcast. So getting a win here, I think, would be quite good.
Yeah, that would be big time bragging rights if we beat them. So got to bring our best lineup and see what we can do.
For sure. So you can find those guys on Twitter at Two and Out CFL. Their show's on iTunes. It's on a bunch of places. It's a great show. I listen to it every week. One of my favorites, not including our own, of all the podcasts that are out there. I'm sure I'm going to say that about everyone's show, but I really do enjoy the Two and Out show. So if you're out there and you haven't listened to it, give it a listen. These guys know what they're talking about. It's a lot of fun. You can tell they enjoy what they do. So give them a listen. And more CFL podcasts, as far as I'm concerned, the better.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so enough of the fantasy football. Let's get into the real football. We're going to do our, as we always, Ticats game review. They absolutely clobbered the Argonauts on Thursday night. The Ticats won that game 42-20 in a game that wasn't really as close as that score would indicate. The Ticats dominated this game on offense, on defense, on special teams. There was really only maybe, about a half a minute there when the Argos scored two touchdowns in the span of like 30 seconds to make the score. I think it was 25-20. That was really the only part of the game where this was even close. And then after that, the Ticats took over and absolutely dominated the Argos. I did not see this coming. I thought Hamilton would win. We both made our picks last week and picked Hamilton, but we're homers, so we were going to pick Hamilton regardless. I did not see this butt kicking coming. There's a lot of things that we can praise in this game, Mike, but let's start with the defense. What a performance.
Yeah, you just gotta name one person, Simone Lawrence. I mean, this guy was on fire the whole game. Maybe the best defensive performance I've ever seen. I know that's saying a lot because I've seen a lot of football, but, you know, just the way he was running around the field, he seemed to be in every single play. You know, he had a fumble recovery, I think a sack, maybe two sacks, I'm not sure, a pick six, many, many tackles. He was just on fire the whole game, and we were talking about how he could be taking that next level this year to being the defensive player of the year, and this is one hell of a start because it was just incredible to watch.
Top five. It was great, yeah. Mike. Yeah. It was great. You want to know his numbers? 7 tackles, 2 sacks, fumble recovery, the interception that he took back for a touchdown, and he had a pass knockdown. Like you said, in watching that game, he was all over the field. Like, it seemed like every other play, it was Simone Lawrence. And I'm with you. I can't think of a defensive performance, and I'm sure someone will correct us and say, well, so-and-so did this, and even last year. This was one of the most dominating performances by a singular player on defense that I think I have ever seen. He was phenomenal. But he wasn't the only one that was phenomenal. There was a lot of good players on this defense.
Yeah, to name another one, John Chick, you know, I don't think he had any sacks in the game, but he was around the quarterback the whole game. He had that pass tip that ended up being the Simone Lawrence touchdown, so he was right in the face of Ray. We had pressure on Ray the whole game, and we talked about it last week. If Ray doesn't have a lot of time, he's not going to be effective, and that's exactly what happened in this game. He was pressured the whole game. He was getting sacked, throwing bad passes, throwing tip passes. The defensive line looks spectacular in this game, better than it has in the last couple of years. So, you know, we had all those players on the opposite side on the defensive line that didn't really, you know, they weren't up to par with Hamilton's defensive line. So to see this newly revamped D-line do its thing and really bring the heat to Ray and, you know, be disruptive the whole game is really encouraging to see.
Chick did have a sack. He had one late in the game. He had the interception that was called back on a penalty, or else, again, more big plays from him. You mentioned the defensive line as a whole, and the most impressive thing about this, they did that all without Ted Laurent. Michael Atkinson was starting in place of Ted Laurent, and that defensive line did not miss a beat. They absolutely abused the Argos offensive line. And all the talk going to this was about all those former Ticats that were playing in Toronto. And I know Brian Hall got a sack, but if you look at the way Hamilton's defensive line played versus how Toronto's defensive line played, I think we can kind of see why those guys weren't brought back.
Yeah, you could, and with like Hickman, you could see him kind of declining over the years, and I'm not sure how much he has left in the tank. You know, you mentioned Atkinson, and just the guys in the middle did a great job. Nevis was in there. He's a beast. He can do his thing. So the depth on this defensive line seems to be incredible. So if Laurent's not in there, there's guys that can fill in the middle that will do a great job, like we saw in this past week.
And the thing with them abusing the Argos offensive line in the way that they did is Toronto has spent a lot of money on that offensive line. They brought in Josh Burke from Montreal. It's an entirely Canadian offensive line, so they are really relying on that. You know, they're taking the Montreal method from all those years past where you start five Canadians on the offensive line. That means you can start Americans elsewhere. And they did not look good. You meant Ray did not have a lot of time. They were constantly getting pressure. It's going to be – I'm a little interested to see how the Argos bounce back from this performance, but I don't want to talk about the Argos. I spent so much of the offseason talking about the Argos. I want to keep talking about the Ticats. Anything else from the defense that really stood out to you aside from the stuff you've already mentioned?
Well, I was a bit surprised that Hoffman Ellis wasn't starting at middle linebacker, I believe. I'm not – did he just get beat out by Dean, or do you know the story there?
That's what it seems like. It seems like they had a competition, and Dean just won the starting role. I was surprised as well when I saw the depth chart, and I saw Dean ahead of Hoffman Ellis, and then Hoffman Ellis was one of the two scratches in the game, too. It was very surprising, but I was impressed by how he played as well. He did not look out of place. There's an article on 3 Down Nation this morning – we're recording this on Monday – that was written by Steve Milton about Larry Dean, and he talks about how, hey, I knew some guys that played in the CFL. I met Simone Lawrence when we were both with the Minnesota Vikings. Like, I know about this league. I know what it's about, and I feel really comfortable here. So we were all talking about Hoffman Ellis, and I still think Hoffman Ellis has a role to play in this team, and I still think he can be a valuable contributor. But Larry Dean could be one of those guys that we weren't talking about. Like, you know, the Delvin Bros, the Eric Harrises, the guys like that that come to the team as free agents that are not being talked about when they're signed because they're not big-name guys. They're not CFL veterans. That ends up becoming one of those solid stud players. I was very impressed by his game as well. It was it showed me. I was curious at first. They bring in Hoffman Ellis from BC, but they're going to start this guy. But he really proved that he belongs on that field.
Yeah, he looked good out there, and the secondary had a pretty good game too. Yeah, it's hard to judge them when you're watching on TV because you don't get a really good grasp of how well they're covering and all that stuff. But I thought Courtney Steven was all over the field. I thought he had a good game. Johnny Sears Jr. had a little bit of a rough game, but maybe that's just first game jitters type of thing. I thought that he should have got a penalty on that Kevin Elliott hit, which took him out of the game. That was looked like he led with his helmet, and I don't know why the ref didn't call the flag, but I guess they missed that one. But overall, I think the secondary had a pretty good game, maybe just because of all the pressure on Ray. You know, you maybe give that to the defensive line for doing such a great job taking the pressure off the secondary.
I'm with you. I'm with you on all that. We are in complete agreement. I was not impressed with Johnny Sears either. I also agree. Should have been flagged for that hit. It was – the pass was broken up, and Ellie – it was a late hit. If nothing else, it was a late hit. And, yeah, I didn't really like him in coverage. I was surprised that he was the one that was playing halfback, not Rico Murray, but Rico Murray was in there as the Sam linebacker. And you didn't see Murray make a ton of plays, but you also didn't see him get beat a bunch. Like, I think I'm with you, though. I think that the pressure the defensive line created, making Ray uncomfortable, led to how good the secondary looked, because there were some lapses there. Jeff Tisdale wasn't great. Dominique Ellis, who we brought in, didn't play. So maybe there's something, we're going to see some changes going into this game against BC. But I think, how do you feel? Because I think from an all-around defensive performance, you can't be too upset. They only allowed 20 points. 14 of those points came really quick. Like, this was a very, very good defensive performance. And I do you feel the same?
I feel the same. And, you know, those points, the second touchdown came off of a Banks fumble, which, you know, the Argos had the ball at, you know, the 10, 15 yard line. I'm not sure. So it's, you can't really blame the defense for that. They were put in a bad situation there. So, but yeah, all night they had pressure on Ray, and they really shut down that potentially potent offense of the Argos. So I'm more than happy with the defensive performance on the first game of the season.
So offensively, as much as there was basically one singular star and then a ton of great effort and play from other defensive players, on offense, it was also, there's one guy that stood out amongst the rest, and it's the guy that we had a lot of questions of going into this game. Jeremiah Mazzoli absolutely looked like it has clicked. It really does. He finishes the game 27 for 37 for 318 yards and 3 touchdowns. Most importantly, 0 turnovers. No interceptions, no fumbles. He did make a couple of bad decisions early in the first quarter, threw some passes into coverage. The Andy Fantuz touchdown, for example, was luck. Came off, Fantuz was covered very nicely, bounced off the Argo defender right into Fantuz's hands. But I think the big thing from Mazzoli, the thing that I take from this, the thing that I'm looking at going, this was the turning point, was after the Argo scored, after you said, Banks fumbles, the Argos get a quick touchdown. They made the score 25-20. Mazzoli drives the field in the next two Ticats drives, goes a combined 15 for 15 for 176 yards, and has 2 touchdown passes. The one to Brandon Banks was on a absolutely gorgeous pump and go that I was like in awe of when I saw it. And then there was the dagger, the kill shot, the 30, I think it was 38 yard touchdown pass to Chad Owens, who made a lovely diving catch. Man, Jeremiah Mazzoli was just on point in this game, and I think that bodes really well for us going forward.
But yeah, it just shows that we don't have a lot to worry about without Claros in the lineup. This guy was, he played like he did in the East Final last year. It was just awesome to watch. It's awesome to see how far this quarterback has come since his first starts, you know, against Calgary a couple years ago, and he just looked out of rhythm, wasn't comfortable. So to see this guy perform the way he did, I mean, 15 for 15 is just off the chart. I mean, you can't get any better than that. 2 touchdowns, and just the time that he brought his game to another level. You know, the Argos just got back in the game, and then he just, you know, got on the field and had a huge response and really brought this team up another level and sealed the victory for the Ticats.
The thing that impressed me, there's two things I want to talk about continuing with Mazzoli before I move on to some other stuff that I really liked. The drive that ended with the Owens touchdown, they went 107 yards. They started with the ball on the 3-yard line and drove the length of the field to put in the kill shot. And the thing with Mazzoli is that he was Ray-like. Like, 15 for 15? Like, are you kidding me? Like, that is just... You don't see quarterbacks do that. You just don't. It does not happen. Exactly. It looked like he was at practice. It looked like he was throwing against air. And that's not meant as any disrespect towards the Argos, but he just looked like he couldn't be stopped. And the other thing that really impressed me was how the Ticats counterpunched to the Argos' punch. You know what I mean? Like, when the Argos scored to get this into a 5-point game. In the past, we've seen Hamilton teams kind of wilt under that sort of pressure. This one did not do that. They came out and they smashed him in the mouth and took over this game. That, to me, was another thing I really liked seeing in this football game.
107-yard drive is just, a lot of teams would fold under that pressure being so deep in their end, and, you know, they just scored 2 touchdowns and the crowd's into it now. So to that in that situation was great to see.
another thing that I really liked about this, and this kind of plays into how well Jeremiah Mazzoli played, was the offensive line. We talked about it. I believe you brought it up last week. One of the things you want to see is, could this offensive line continue to play at the level they were playing at? And what do we get? We get an offensive line that absolutely dominated this very expensive, very talented Argos front four. And again, if this is the offensive line we're going to see for this year, the Ticats are going to win a lot of football games.
Yeah, give any quarterback a lot of time and you're gonna win some games. And, you know, to add to the time that he had, Mazzoli can escape from some guys and make his own plays happen. So, and I think Claros can do that too. I'm not sure anymore with the coming back from the knee injury, but before he could really move around and make some plays on his own and, you know, run the ball a bit. So, yeah, the offensive line is so important to the offense. We all know that. So to have a solid unit in place and some depth behind them is a huge win for the Ticats.
Now, quarterbacks don't go 15 for 15 on back-to-back drives without having some very sure-handed receivers. And the three big stars for the Ticats in the receiving corps are Luke Tasker, Andy Fantuz, and Chad Owens. And they all came and played. Luke Tasker was targeted 8 times in this game. He had 8 catches for 81 yards. Andy Fantuz was targeted 8 times in this game. He had 7 catches for 99 yards and a touchdown. Chad Owens, who I predicted would have like a massive monster game and would score the game-winning touchdown, he didn't score the game-winning touchdown. He did, however, score that touchdown that really put the game out of reach. He was, very surprisingly, the most targeted receiver on this team. Mazzoli threw in his direction 11 times. Now, Owens only caught 6 of those passes for 61 yards and touchdown, but not all of them were catchable balls, and he did have a couple ones that were a little overthrown that he could have had. There was one I remember early in the game that was a deep ball that like barely touched his fingers that I was hoping he would have. But like I said, he did score that last touchdown to make it 39-20. That was the final nail in the Argos coffin. And you got to think that that felt really sweet for a guy to go in against his old team, the team that didn't want him, and to kind of stick it to him right at the end there.
Oh yeah, like just the way that he made that catch. I mean, if it was just an easy catch in the end zone, nothing spectacular, it would have been great. But for him to make that diving catch in the way he did is just, it's just icing on the cake. A great comeback for Chad Owens, and he's got to feel great about it. And the Ticats got to feel great about picking him up, because it's only one game, but as of right now, it still looks like he has a lot left in the tank.
It sure does. It sure does. The one thing about the offense, though, that I didn't really like, and I think this might be a theme running through the whole season, as it's been the last few seasons, they didn't really run the football. They did have 15 times they ran the ball, and CJ Gable carried 11 of those times, but 7 of those 11 carries came after the Ticats took their 3-score lead when they got up 39-20. They were up at one point 25-6, and I would have thought that would have been the time when we would have seen a little bit more CJ Gable, but they didn't really use him. And yeah, Mazzoli was on fire, so I understand you got to keep him in rhythm, but I was a little underwhelmed with how little Gable saw in this game. It wasn't needed, and they got the win, so it's not something I'm going to harp on too much, but we've always been talking for what seems like years about, man, I wish the Ticats would have a running game, and wait, well, if CJ Gable comes back, then they're going to have a running game. Gable was very healthy in this game, did not see the ball a lot. I'm a little disappointed in that.
Yeah, I would like to see him get more touches. It's just the way it seems to be with the Ken Austin offense. We've talked about it a lot, that he's very pass happy, doesn't seem to want to run the ball a ton. We have the guy back there that has the capability to make a lot of yards happen, make a lot of good things happen. I would have liked to see him get the ball a bit more out of the backfield as well in the catching category, but that didn't happen that much either. So I think going forward, we'll see more of Gable incorporated into the offense, but last week it just didn't seem to be in the plans.
Yeah, and again, like, you look at those last few carries that he had, and you look at it, and you can still get kind of happy about it, because on the very last carry of the game, he took that ball, and it was over. The time had run out, and he was still fighting for yards. He was trying to get into the end
zone. He almost got a touchdown. Yeah, he almost got a touchdown.
It was kind of crazy. It's like you would think that, oh, on first contact, maybe he goes down because the game's over, but I think CJ Gable only knows one speed, and that's hard, and that showed on that last play.
Yeah, and another thing about the offense is, did you notice that Banks seemed to be incorporated into the offense a lot more than he has been in the past? He seemed to be out there for a lot of plays.
Absolutely, and he had one of the big touchdown catches. He had the TD catch, like I said, on the pump and go from Mazzoli that extended the lead after the Argos kind of got back into it. Now, Terrence Tolliver got hurt in this game, and I think that is what led Banks to get into the game more, but he was in there early in the first half too, so maybe we're going to see a little bit more Brandon Banks in the passing game. And I thought he looked like pretty good, to be honest. Like I said, he had the TD, but I thought he was pretty good in the passing game. I'm kind of excited to maybe see him get on offense a little bit more.
Yeah, every time he's got in there in past seasons, he's caught pretty much everything that's thrown his way. He's made plays. Like last year, he made that huge play against the BC Lions where he shook a tackle from Al Mimian, like the best tackler in the league, top five at least, and went to the end zone. So you haven't seen anything that to discourage you away from using Banks. And maybe they're looking at him long term saying, okay, he can't return punts and kicks forever. Maybe we should work him into the offense, get him more experience, and later in his career, maybe he can be just a receiver, a productive receiver, and take away his kick return duties.
Kind of like with Chad Owens, where he came into this league as a special teams demon and morphed into what's now a pretty reliable receiver. And we've had our issues with Owens over the years with making fun of him for drop passes and stuff like that. And he had a few drops in this game that weren't that great, but he could do that. We could see that. Now, special teams wise, how impressed were you with Brett Maher?
Very impressed. He was basically perfect. You know, the punts were great. He had that 50-yard field goal, made all the extra points. I don't think he missed any field goals. So this guy looks great. I had my doubts coming into the season. He didn't have the best year last year in Ottawa, as the stats showed. But as of the first game, I mean, we have a pretty good replacement for it's better than Medlock. That's what we've been harping on Medlock. If we have anything to, pick at Medlock about, it's the punting. And we've talked about that. But, to see this guy come in the first game and make all his field goals, make that long field goal, which he's had a lot of trouble with in the past with the 45-plus yarders, is really, really encouraging. And we might have a great replacement for Medlock this season.
We could indeed. There's another guy that stood out on special teams that I think we have to shout out, and that's Mike Daly. This guy was a beast out there. Maher, on the first punt of the game, had a gorgeous punt, but that wouldn't have looked as good if Daly wasn't down there to make a great open field tackle to get the Argos down at like the 2 or 3 yard line. It was absolutely awesome. The defense then came on, forced a 2-and-out. The Argos conceded the safety to get the first points on the board, and that was all thanks to Maher's punt and Daly's special teams coverage. And then he adds the punt block later in the game. This guy, every time he gets on the field, whether it's on defense or on special teams, he makes a play. He's always making plays, and you know that he's going to do something great every game, and this game he was an absolute monster.
Yeah, it makes you want to see him on the field when the defense is out there. Like you said, he just makes plays, and last year when he was in there and filling in for Butler, he had a couple interceptions. He had a great game in Edmonton when I was there and saw it live. So this guy is an up-and-comer for sure. He gives 100% all the time, special teams, defense. So, it's tempting to put him in there on defense and see what he can do in a full-time capacity, because as we know, Butler's out for the season. So I know he wasn't in the starting lineup for the defense this week, but it's tempting to put him in there going forward.
For sure, for sure. Unfortunately, we do have to talk about something terrible that happened this game, and that was the injury to Jermaine Gabriel. That was really, really tough to watch. Carted him off, looked like a neck injury, perhaps a concussion. It's come out in the days since that he's going to be okay, he's going to make a recovery, he's going to be back to 100%. I just want to send out from yourself and from myself just, speedy recovery to Jermaine Gabriel. He may play for the Argos, but you never want to see guys get hurt. So I hope he can be back on the field making plays, because he's a fun player to watch. So speedy recovery to you, Mr. Gabriel.
Yeah, just a terrible thing. You never want to see that. And it was just a fluke. He went in for a tackle, so did Matt Black, and they just kind of hit each other, and he went down in a heap. And I'm just glad to hear that he's nothing major. When he got put on the stretcher, he gave the thumbs up and all that to let us know that he was okay. And I'm just glad to see that he's gonna recover fine.
Yeah, same here. It looked bad, and it was bad, but it is nice to hear that he's going to make a full recovery. The game wasn't all that we got out of the Ticats this week, as just earlier this morning, again, we're recording this on Monday, the Ticats have signed a quarterback, and it's one that I am very familiar with. They have picked up former Notre Dame and Florida State quarterback Everett Golson. Now, for those out there that don't know who Everett Golson was, he played at the University of Notre Dame for 2 seasons. He missed one due to academic issues. He sat out his sophomore season, but in his freshman year at Notre Dame, he led the Irish to the BCS National Championship game. He wasn't asked to do much. Again, freshman quarterbacks rarely are, but he had over 2,400 yards passing, at 12 touchdowns to 6 interceptions, and he added an additional 298 yards rushing and 6 TDs to that. Then he, as I said, he sat out his sophomore season, came back for his junior year, and his numbers exploded. 3,445 yards, 29 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, 283 yards rushing, and 8 rushing touchdowns. He was phenomenal that year when he was given much more to do. He then graduates Notre Dame and goes to Florida State for his final year, and unfortunately he got hurt in the 7th game of the season or the 8th game of the season. I can't remember what it was, but he got a concussion, essentially ended his college career. But before he got hurt, man, he was again on fire. He had over 1,700 yards passing. He had 11 touchdowns and only one interception. And Florida State was 6-1 at the time. So it looks like this is going to be a guy who, when Ja'Cory Harris went down, Austin said, if it's a long-term thing, we're going to bring in a quarterback. I guess Golson is the guy that they're going to bring in. And as a tried and true, like, loyal Notre Dame fan, I'm kind of excited to see this guy play because he's mobile. He's got a big arm. And if you look at those numbers, his decision-making, which is very key in Ken Austin's offense, has gotten better every year. We're probably not going to see him a lot on the field, which is to be understood, but I'm kind of excited that maybe this is the start of the Ticats grooming quarterbacks instead of having to go elsewhere to find their guys. Do you have any insight or any thoughts on the signing of Golson?
Well, I don't really remember him play. I watched that national championship game. I believe they got whooped pretty bad, right?
Oh, they got absolutely destroyed by Alabama. Like, it was 21-0 before the first quarter was over, and it was done.
But, you know, I'm just going to go off your judgment. I mean, the guy played in big-time college universities, big-time competition in the college ranks down in the States. That doesn't always equate to a good CFL quarterback, but this guy has a lot of potential. He had great numbers in college. So, you know, bring him in, see if you can groom him, and maybe down the road he might be something in the CFL.
Yeah, I legitimately believe, and I believe this when I saw him play at Notre Dame, that he has the skill set suited for the CFL. Like I said, big arm, is mobile. Like, that's what you think of when you think of Zach Caleros. The difference between the two is years as a professional, obviously, and the decision-making. But I think Golson's decision-making, like I said, look at the numbers, man. The interception, touchdown interception ratio was about 2-1 during his first 2 years, and then 11 touchdowns, so only one interception this last year. Like, that shows to me that the game started slowing down for him and he started to make better decisions. If he can get it with this team and get with a quarterback, former quarterback like Ken Austin, and in a quarterback room with guys like Jeremiah Mazzoli and Zach Caleros and a guy like Stefan Potasek, who knows how to get these guys doing what they're doing, I think he could really turn into something. I'm not saying he's going to be the long-term starter for this team or he's going to unseat Caleros or anything like that, but as we've seen in the last few years, having a quality backup quarterback is never a bad thing. The Ticats have one now in Jeremiah Mazzoli. They could have another one in Everett Golson.
Yeah, and Caleros isn't, I don't think anyways, I think he's a guy that will teach the backups. You know, he'll be helpful to the backups. You know, just see the backups as a potential job stealer for them. I think he will, you know, help this kid as much as he can. So coming into this team with Ken Austin and the quarterbacks like Caleros and Mazzoli is going to help this kid a lot, I think.
So there was some controversy, well, not controversy this week, but the CFL and TSN released their top 50 players list before the start of the regular season, as they do every year. It, of course, always brings out some debate. So why not? You and I might as well talk about it. There were 6 Ticats in the top 50. Emmanuel Davis was 44. Luke Tasker was 30. Brandon Banks was 19. Simone Lawrence was 14. Ted Laurent was 13. And Zach Caleros was 5th. Are there any Ticats missing from this list? Any of these players you think maybe should have been a little higher or maybe even a little lower? What are your thoughts on the Ticats finishing in the top 50?
Well, I think that Tasker should be a bit higher than that. He's the, you know, one of the most dependable receivers in the league. He catches everything that's thrown his way. So I think they could have jacked him up a bit. And same with Lawrence. I mean, you see it in the first game. This guy's one of the best linebackers in the league. So he should have maybe been in the top 10. And maybe even Ted Laurent could have been in the top 10. But, you know, this is all opinion stuff. So it's just a list. But I would like to see those guys a bit higher up there.
Yeah, same with Tasker. I'm with you on Tasker. I thought he should have been a lot higher. I think the rest of the guys were slotted correctly based on what we saw last year. But I think after game one of this year, Simone Lawrence has worked himself well into the top 10. But yeah, Tasker to me at 30, that did seem awfully, awfully low. Personally, and I said this last week when we were talking about quarterbacks, I said Zach Caleros is the best quarterback in the game. I think he's the best player in the game. I think he should have been number 1. Injury be damned, I don't care. I think when you look at body of work and just skill set and everything that comes into it. I don't think there's much argument against Zach Collaros as the best player in this league. I really don't.
No, his numbers when he went down were just spectacular. He was runaway MOP, but, you know, injuries happen. And I guess if you win the Grey Cup, you're just automatically going to be the number one player in the league if you're the quarterback. So that seems to be the trend in the top 50 the last couple years. So, you know, I guess we just have to win the Grey Cup and then Claris will be number one.
Yeah, he will be. And you're right. It has kind of seemed like that. The only quarterback that didn't really get that kind of respect was Darian Durant. I remember the year after Saskatchewan won the Grey Cup, he was number three or number four, maybe. And I think it was Ricky Ray was number one. And everyone was like, every other year it's been a Grey Cup winner. And people, especially, well, you know, a Saskatchewan player got quote unquote disrespected. So obviously people are going to be ticked off. But here's the top 10. So John Bowman was 10th. Jamal Westerman was 9th. Darrell Walker was 8th. Adarius Bowman was 7th. Andrew Harris was 6th. Claros, obviously 5th. Burris was number 4. Bo Levi Mitchell was number 3. Adam Big Hill was number 2. And number 1, like you alluded to, was Edmonton quarterback Mike Riley. Any surprises in that top 10 for you?
Andrew Harris.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Well, like, why is he number 9? I mean, what was his
number? He was number 6.
Why was he number 6? Like, I'm not going to rag on him too much. I always seem to almost every episode, but he's a good player, but he's not top 10 in the league. I'm sorry.
I kind of agree with you. And I was also kind of surprised with Darrell Walker. Don't get me wrong. I think he was awesome last year and he was so much fun to watch. But it was one season and that seems like a little bit too much to be pushing him into the top 10 in the league. Especially when a guy like Luke Tasker, who we've seen do it year after year after year, is sitting at number 30. That was a little strange to me. Again, not and no disrespect to Walker because he's an awesome player. But I can't recall. Maybe you remember better than I do. But where was Aaron Rodgers in the top 50 last year? Because he had that impressive run at the end. Obviously not as big as Walker's was last year. Walker actually played in the regular season and did phenomenal things. But Aaron Rodgers, everyone was so high on him. But there's no way he finished. I wouldn't say. He might not even have been in the top 50. But he definitely was not in the top 10.
Yeah, it's a little bit too much too soon. But he played pretty darn good in that first game. So maybe they were right on this on, you know, just taking the first year and assuming that he's going to have another monster year. So, yeah, I could see that maybe not top 10. He should be on the list, but maybe not top 10.
Oh, he should definitely be on the list. He's one of the top 50 players in the league. I just think top 10 was a little much after, 12, 13 games last year? Again, just my opinion.
Did Andrew Harris have 1,000 yards last year?
No. I think he was the leader in yards from scrimmage, but he didn't have 1,000 yards. Okay. I think there was only one or two guys. I know Terrell Sutton had 1,000 yards, and I know, what's his name, from, was in Edmonton, was in BC, Jerome Messam. Jerome Messam had 1,000 yards. Yeah. He got it with Calgary. I'm 100%, not 100% sure, but I'm almost, 100% sure that Harris didn't have 1,000 yards.
Well, who'd you rather have on your team, Jerome Messam or Andrew Harris?
Well, exactly. Harris is that back that can do a little bit more because he's better catching out of the backfield, but Messam's durable, and Messam is a bull. Personally, I think I'd rather have Messam. I do.
Yeah. You know. Anyways.
Yeah. One more thing just before we move on. How surprised were you that Big Hill was number 2?
I was a bit surprised. I think that he's maybe the top linebacker in the league. You know, he's in that conversation for sure. Usually you don't see defensive players that high in the list. Usually it's quarterbacks in the top 3 or maybe a receiver in there. But, you know, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be number 2, but I was a bit surprised to see him at that position.
Oh, yeah. He's an awesome player. I love watching him play, but he is now the highest ranked defensive player to ever make this list. He beat Solomon Elamimian, who was number 3, I think, last year. So, very, very strange. I really like Big Hill, but yeah, I was surprised that he would finish above guys like Mitchell and Burris and Collaros, especially. Not say he doesn't deserve the accolades, because, like I said, he's an awesome player and he's a treat to watch. But yeah, I'm a little surprised that he would get up there so high.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, definitely top 10, but me, number two did take me by surprise. I remember when I was watching the list, I was going, okay, so they've mentioned, you know how they do that pause, they go to number 3, and then they go, okay, we're going to wait to do the top 3. I was like, okay, we got Mitchell left, we got Riley left, and I could not for the life of me, and this is, maybe says more about me than it says about Big Hill, could not think of who the hell's the third guy. I couldn't think of it, and then when I was like, oh, shoot, yeah, Adam Big Hill.
Yeah, you're just so used to seeing the offensive players dominate the top 3, except for last year with LMM and at 3. But yeah, it's he's gonna have to prove it again this year. He had a good, pretty good start to the season last weekend.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. What did you think, last thing before we move on, because this just came to me. What did you think about all nine starting quarterbacks making the top 50?
It's interesting. I guess it shows, you know, it's just, obviously it's just opinion from TSN crew, but it shows that we in this league have pretty good quarterbacks right now. You know, to have all nine in the top 50 shows that all nine of these guys can perform pretty well. So the TSN guys thought pretty highly of all the quarterbacks in the league, and that's a good thing, I think.
I agree, but I'm going to say something else. I think it's ridiculous. I don't think Drew Willey should have been in the top 50. I don't think Darian Durant should have been in the top 50. And Trevor Harris wasn't in the top 50. And Trevor Harris, after last season, it could be argued that he should be in the, like, he should be in the top 50 players in this league, whether he's a backup or not. Kevin Glenn, I think he's there. And then the guys that we saw at the top, for sure. But yeah, like, Willey hasn't really shown, like, again, can't stay healthy, hasn't shown that he's that elite level top 50 quarterback. And Darian Durant hasn't played it.
Yeah, and Durant hasn't played. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if they, you know, take an account from last year and then bring it into this year, or if they're just projecting who they think is going to be a top 50 player this season. I don't know if they consider the past or they're just thinking about the future, but I guess they don't take in consideration the last two seasons, because Willie hasn't been on the field much and Durant has seen, like, you know, maybe a series or two in the last 2 years. So yeah, it's a head scratcher how they're on the list.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of the problem with this and why I don't really get too up in arms. You go on Twitter when this thing's released and you see fans just furious about it. But I don't know the methodology of, like, how are you picking these top 50 players? Are you picking them based on past performance? Are you picking them based on what you think they'll do in the future? A combination of both? Are you picking them based on, if I was to start a team, who would I want on my team? Like, I can't figure out, and they don't release what they tell them. They just say, here, pick the top 50 players. So that's why I don't get too angry about these things. But yeah, there's some things on this that scratch your head. But every year there's going to be something. A year from now, when we sit down and start this and do this again, we're going to be talking about, how is this guy there? And it's just a fun little thing to debate, and I think that's why TSN does it. And we had our fun little debate. But now we're going to debut a brand new segment on the show. So last year, you probably heard Mike call someone a bozo at least once a week. It captured my imagination. So I thought, you know what? Mike does not have his own segment on this show. I tend to do a lot of the talking because I'm a jerk and I dominate conversations. So I thought to myself, and I said, you know what? Let's give Mike a segment. And Mike, tell them what your segment is.
Well, it's the Bozo of the Week. And for the first annual Bozo of the Week, it's got to go to Arash Madani of Sportsnet. If you're a CFL fan, you're familiar with him. I think that he's a top-notch reporter when it comes to his sources, and he usually gets the first crack at news a lot of the time. Not all the time, but he's usually pretty good on that. But he's just so negative about everything, it seems, CFL-wise, especially the Argonauts situation. Now, we had the first game of the season, the Argos and the Ticats, brand new, well, not refurbished, BMO Stadium. They're moved out of Rogers Center. They're outdoors again. It seemed like a great night. You know, the performance of the Argos wasn't great, but from all accounts, I've heard that people had a great time. It was a great atmosphere, a great new beginning for the Argos. And all this guy thinks about is the negative. He's tweeting out that the loudest the crowd was when those idiots ran on the field, and all this stuff about how, you know, the Argos is not going to work and all this stuff. So listen, I'm not saying he has, you know, reporters don't have to be cheerleaders for the league. That's not their job. They have to report. And he works for Sportsnet, which is not the rights holders to the league. And obviously he's not going to be pumping up the league because he works for them, but this guy just has to rain on every parade. So I'm just sick of it. I don't follow him on Twitter. I just hear it through other people on Twitter, basically what he's doing. So, you know, the Bozo of the Week, the first Bozo of the Week has to go to Arash Madani for just being so negative over a very positive thing, the Argos moving into BMO Field.
Excellent. I love it. I agree with you. You probably saw on Twitter where this came from. Marshall Ferguson, who is the play-by-play man for the Hamilton Tiger Cats on TSN 1150 and a former McMaster Marauders quarterback, he really went in on Arash after this happened. Like, he was unstoppable in his criticisms of them. And I agree. I think that what he said was kind of stupid. Like, the loudest that got was when a couple of jackasses ran on the field. Absolutely not. That place was bumping. It was fantastic. Like you said, all the reports are that fans had a great time, that the atmosphere was amazing. Unfortunately, I did not get a chance to go to the game. I was bummed about that, but it seems like what I saw at the preseason game was just amped up 10 times. People were... They had the Rocket there, man. Like, that's what bummed me out the most. I could have gone to the tailgate and met Rocket Ismail, one of my football idols. But, like, Rocket was there. Joe Theismann was there. Mike Pinball Clemens obviously was there. Damon Allen was there. Doug Flutie was tweeting out, man, I really wish I could be in Toronto right now. Like, the atmosphere there got people excited. And then this joker comes out and makes it all about something that is just ridiculous. So, Mike, thumbs up to your first Bozo of the Week. And I'm kind of looking forward to these every week now. And I think maybe at the end of the year, we'll come up with our Bozo, or not we, you.
Bozo of the Year?
Bozo of the Year. We'll crown a Bozo of the Year. And maybe we'll try to get something made up and we'll see if we can get to them and hand them a trophy or a medal or something. But yeah, I don't know. But I think Bozo of the Year would be pretty good. Because I think this Bozo of the Week, thumbs up for me, pal.
No, the Bozo Awards.
Oh, we could do the Bozo. That'd be great.
First annual Bozies. Yeah, the Bozies. I like that. But yeah, just, you know, you can rag on the Argos for years and years, and he had a right to. You know, the situation at the Skydome, the Brayley ownership, the low attendance, all that stuff. But, you know, it just shows what bias Rogers has. I heard on the fan, they were laughing about the crowd and how it wasn't completely sold out and how it's not going to work and blah, blah, blah. But it's just... so obvious the bias they have against the Argos. I don't see TSN ripping down the Blue Jays every week and all that stuff. So, you know, it's been a issue that CFL fans, it's been beaten to death about how Rogers wants to kill the CFL and all that. I don't necessarily believe that, but it's pretty obvious that there's a tendency to focus on the negative, especially when it comes to the Argonauts on Sportsnet. So, you know, I'm kind of sick and tired of talking about it, but I just had to make him the Bozo of the Week just because I thought it was ludicrous to rain on a parade that was that seemed to be a big success and one of the biggest events. You know, when you watch that game on TV, it felt like a Grey Cup, did it not?
Absolutely.
Like just the overhead cam and all the pomp and circumstance or whatever that's called. But it seemed like a huge game. They made it feel like a huge game. And I didn't see a lot of negative. And I keep going on and on here. But if it was a closer game, I believe that once the Argos got it to 25-20, that place was rocking. You were watching on TV and the camera was shaking because it was so loud. And you talked about in the preseason how they were stomping on the ground. They were doing that. And it really makes a loud, loud sound and loud. It's a big impact. So to watch it at home and feel the crowd, the camera shaking, don't tell me it didn't get loud there. You know what I mean?
For sure. And like, if you're in any crowd at any stadium and you're the home team and your team's down by nearly 3 touchdowns, the crowd's going to be quiet. I've been at Ticat games where they have gotten smoked and the crowd is absolutely dead. And Hamilton fans are some of the most passionate, aggressive, loud fans we have in this league. So go back and watch some Rough Riders game from last year. Loud fans that are sitting on their hands, not saying a thing because their team is getting blown out. Winnipeg has one of the loudest stadiums in this league now with their new Investors Group Field. And when they're getting beat, go back and watch the game last year where the Ticats absolutely stomped them. Those fans are quiet. Like, that's going to happen. If you're at a game and the home team's getting smoked, the crowd's not going to be in it. But like you said, as soon as the Argos got back into it, that place was rocking. And I still think the Argos, despite getting hammered by the Ticats, are going to be a good team this year. And I think you're going to see the rocking crowd more than anything else. But the main point is, I hope that people who went to the game, even if their home team didn't play that well, what they took from it was the atmosphere was fun. And that's what they kept showing on TV. They kept showing how fun the atmosphere was. That's important. Rome wasn't built in a day. So anyone saying, oh, after one game, they didn't sell out. They came damn close to a sellout. Nearly 25,000 people there. That's a good crowd for an Argos game on a Thursday night. We're always used to, oh, the days of the week. Oh, it's a Thursday night game. This is why people don't go. They got to go to work the next day. Oh, it's a Friday game in the summer while people are going to the cottage. Oh, it's a Saturday game while people are at the cottage. There's always excuses as to why attendance is low, but they get almost 25,000 on a Thursday night. That's great. And I'm all for this working, and I think it's going to work. And I said that back when I went to the stadium and saw it at a preseason game. I saw this in a much smaller way. I think this is great. I think anyone who's crapping on it is an idiot. So let's just leave it at that, and let's move on to the Ticats game preview.
Yeah.
The Tabbies are playing this week, Canada Day, 7 o'clock here at Tim Hortons Field. They got the BC Lions. So, Mike, offensively, what do you think are the keys to the game, or what are you looking for the offense to do to get this win and to get the Ticats to 2-0? Because this is something we should have mentioned. The Ticats winning against Toronto in week one, that's the first time this team has been 1-0 since 2004. So this is big. The Ticats have a chance now with these two back-to-back home games against BC, against Winnipeg, to get to 3-0 before they head on that four-game road trip and before Zach Caleros comes back. I like where this team is headed, but I want to know, in this game specifically, what are you looking for out of the offense?
I'm looking for Mazzoli to have somewhat of a repeat performance, because if this guy plays any way that he did last week, I think we're gonna win this game. So I'm looking at Mazzoli to really, what's the word? Just do it again. Have those same numbers. Three touchdowns, 27 through 37. Those are great numbers. So if he can be effective like that again, we're going to have a good chance at winning this game. And I'd like to see Gable get more into it. I know we didn't have to run the ball that much last week because Mazzoli was so hot in the offense. The receivers were doing their great jobs. But give him the ball a little bit more, even if it's passes out of the backfield. We have to get this guy running full tilt like he was a couple years ago. Get him really back into the game. I know he does great jobs on blocking. That's a big part of his game. But give him the ball a bit more and see what he can do after those injuries. So Mazzoli, Gable, and I'm looking at Owens again. I want to see him have an even bigger game. He had a good game, big touchdown catch, around 60 yards receiving, but I want to see him really step up his game and maybe get 100 yards receiving and a touchdown. So those three guys are who I'm looking at in particular.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold my breath on the team running more. I think with how well Mazzoli's been playing, I think Austin's going to let him rip. Like, he's going to let her go. And getting Gable more involved will be great. But as long as the team wins, I'll be happy. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that's a great way to look at it. Defensively, I'm looking at a couple things myself. I think this team's got to contain Jonathan Jennings. The last time these two teams met was the only time that Jennings has started against the Ticats. He went 23 for 33 for 247 yards and three touchdowns. He did have an interception, but man, he looked phenomenal against the Ticats. And he didn't look that great this past week against Calgary. He didn't look terrible, but he wasn't great. He definitely looked like a guy who is making only his like eighth or ninth career start. He went 24-42 for 248 yards with zero touchdowns, but zero interceptions. And BC surprisingly won that game against Calgary. I think that took a lot of people by surprise. Not someone that I know, you picked BC to win last week, so congratulations on that one. But I think containing Jennings is something that they very much have to do. And I think in conjunction with that, I think if they can find a way to contain Jennings, they'll find a way to limit Manny Arsenal. Now, do you remember last year, Arsenal started off the season, he was not having a great year. He was out there chirping other teams, defensive backs, and he just wasn't playing very well. He didn't start off this season very well either. He only had four catches for 38 yards against the Stampeders last weekend. But it seemed like he sort of started to turn the corner when Jennings came under center and replaced Travis Lule. In that Hamilton game they played, Arsenal had six catches for only 40 yards, but he scored a touchdown. He also had games of 94 yards, 137 yards with two touchdowns, and 151 yards and two touchdowns. So those two guys clearly have a connection going, and I think that you have to limit Arsenal, which I think is absolutely necessary, you'll have to find a way to contain Jennings. So I think if they can do one, especially if they can contain Jennings, I think Arsenal's taken out of the game, and I think if they can limit Arsenal, Jennings will have to look elsewhere, and I think that bodes well for the Ticats.
Yeah, Arsenal's the number one receiver there, so if we can take him away, then we have a good shot, and it would stop the running game as well. They got Jeremiah Johnson in there. I think that he's a quality running back, and I think he can do some damage. So yeah, take away Arsenal and Jennings and the run game, and we're golden.
Yeah, I think something, again, this is something we didn't touch on in the Argos game, but that run defense was phenomenal. The Argos only ran the ball seven times, mostly because they were down by so much that they were forced to throw the ball, but they only had 1 yard rushing in that game. That's a performance that is going to be impossible to repeat. But if they can limit, whether it's Jeremiah Johnson, who I think it's going to be, or Anthony Allen, if he gets a chance, if they can limit him to like under 40 yards rushing and put the game in Jennings' hands with this defense and how they swarmed Ricky Ray, I think they can do a good job. The one thing Jennings has up on Ray, though, is he can scramble, he can move. So they're going to have to be a little bit more sound in their assignments. But I really do think that the one key to this game is containing Jennings, and I think everything else will fall from there.
Yeah, I think if you keep him in the pocket, you're gonna have a good chance to win. If he's running around out there making plays, then it might be a tight game. But I'm looking forward to this game. I think that, you know, you got Jennings, you got Mazzoli facing off. I think there are two young quarterbacks that are coming up and have a lot of talent. And it could be a high-scoring game. You never know. Unless Hamilton's defense plays the same way they did last week, then maybe not. But this has a potential for a game of the week, I think.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you there. I think this could be one of the more exciting games that we get this week. CFL picks. We started doing them last week. We're going to continue doing them this week. Again, feel free to join our Pick'em group that is being run by Andrew on Twitter. I believe he goes by Hammy A-hole. He set up the group Oski Weewees. That's OSKIEWEEWEES. Come in, join the group. We are going to have a Ticats prize pack for you. You're going to get a large black Ticats t-shirt and a Ticats toque if you can come out on top in this CFL Pick'em pool this year. So I figured before we get into our picks, I should update everyone on the standings of the CFL Pick'em pool. And this kind of made me laugh. The guy in number one, his name is, he has 421 points. His name's Ticat Mike. Do you know who that is?
I think a very handsome individual.
No, my name's not Ticat Mike.
Yes, of course. Boom. Oh, yeah, very, very not pleasing to the eye individual. That would be me.
All right, so
I got lucky this week. So 3-1, baby.
Yeah, you went 3-1. The lone whiff was the Ottawa Edmonton game, which I think almost everyone who isn't an Ottawa fan whiffed on.
Yeah, it was close to being 4-0, but Ottawa pulled it out. So yeah, I can't win them all, I guess.
No, in second place is me. I have 240 points and I'm in second place. I was riding high, man. I was in first place after the first two games, and I thought those were the two harder games to get right. Hamilton going into Toronto and winning, and Montreal going into Winnipeg and winning. And I went into Saturday going, oh man, the Esks and the Stamps, those are gimmies. Those are the two ones that lost, sunk me down. I was first place going into Saturday. Mike, because of your BC pick, you leapfrogged me. You have an almost 200 point advantage this early on me. That's quite impressive. And in third place, we have Tina Banshee with 210 points. So I don't know. I think it's kind of funny that we decide we're going to do Pick'em this year. We're going to give away a Ticats prize pack. And after week one, the two guys that host the podcast that aren't supposed to win the prize pack are in first and second place.
Yeah, I want that prize pack.
I know you do. You're one of the
more Ticats gear, the better.
I think you're one of the few people who a large black t-shirt would actually fit. I don't know why they would give out large t-shirts. The Ticats fans are a hefty bunch.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, so hopefully my first place reign continues going forward.
We will find out after week two. So let's get into our picks. The first game of the week, we have a doubleheader on Thursday and a doubleheader on Friday. The opening game of the week sees the Ottawa Redblacks travel to Montreal to take on the Montreal Alouettes. One of these two teams is going to finish at 2-0 in the week and be, at worst, tied for first place in the East Division. So between Ottawa and Montreal, Mike, who are you taking?
I got to take Ottawa. I think that, you know, they performed so well against the Edmonton Eskimos defense, a top-notch defense. You know, they lost their coordinator, but I still think they have the talent there to be one of the best in the league. So I'm going to pick Ottawa just because of the way they performed last week on the offensive side of the ball. Their defense was not great, but we just talked about how it might be the game of the week, BC Hamilton. I think this has potential to be another great game. So long story short, I got Ottawa.
Well, we are disagreeing on the first game. That's good. I like when we disagree. I'm taking the Alouettes. I was really impressed with some of the stuff they did offensively against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I think they're at home. They're coming off that big win. You were high on the Alouettes, even though you had them finishing fourth, like most everyone does, but said that they're going to be a really good fourth place team. There was just a few mental mistakes that changed that game in Winnipeg from being a massive blowout. Kevin Glenn was on fire. Daron Carter looks like he hasn't missed a beat. SJ Green's still good. They can run the football. That defense swarmed Winnipeg and created so many problems. Henry Burris will not play this game. Trevor Harris will. I don't think you're going to see a ton of drop-off in the play at the quarterback, but I think I just got... At home, this was a tough one between these two, but at home, I'm going to go with the Alouettes. The second game of the Thursday doubleheader sees the Toronto Argonauts travel west to take on the Saskatchewan Roughriders in their season opener. The Riders had a bye last week. This is the final home opener at Old Mosaic Stadium. The Riders move into their new stadium next season, so you know the crowd's going to be amped for this. They've been waiting forever to get this game going because they had the bye in week one. They're coming off the terrible season last year. They got the roster turnover, the coaching turnover, the front office turnover. Expectations are, I think, pretty high in Rider Nation. Mm-hmm. Argos. Riders, who you got?
I think the Argos are going to go in there and spoil the party. I think that they'll have a bounce back game after a poor performance last week. And, you know, maybe not beat down the Riders, but I think they're going to pull out the win. So I got the Argonauts in this one.
For everything you just said and then some, I got the Argos in this one too. I am still high on them as a team that's going to be in the conversation for the Grey Cup at the end of the year. And I think Saskatchewan will be better. I just think it's going to take a little bit to get going. And I don't think they're going to have enough to beat the Argos in this game at this time. Next, we have BC at Hamilton. Do we even bother? Who you got?
I got Hamilton. I just think they're a better team than BC, and it's going to show on Friday night.
I also obviously have the Ticats. BC's on a shorter week than Hamilton. Hamilton played Thursday. BC played Saturday. BC's got to fly across the country and play in a different time zone. I think that all leads to a Ticats victory on Canada Day at Tim Hortons Field, and the Ticats get to 2-0. Our last game of the week, the second half of the Friday night doubleheader, sees the Winnipeg Blue Bombers head to McMahon Stadium to take on the Calgary Stampeders. One of these two teams is going to be 0-2 after this game, and I think we're in agreement as to who that team's going to be. Mike, who you got in this one?
I got the Bombers.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I picked the Bombers. Maybe it's foolish, but I don't know, man. Calgary didn't look that good either against BC. Is Bo Levi Mitchell the real deal? I'm not sure he is. I just think he's overrated. I think that he should be a better quarterback, but he just isn't. So I'm going to go with the Bombers. I think they bounce back after a terrible, terrible performance last week and, you know, shock the world, per se, and take a win against Calgary.
I'm speechless. I got the Stampeders in this one. I just don't think Winnipeg's very good. I think Calgary, yeah, I agree, did not look like Calgary against BC, but I'm still not going to pick Winnipeg to go into McMahon and beat the Stampeders. Mm-hmm. No, sir. But I'm shocked. If you nail that one, you're definitely going to be in first place in the pool again this week, because I got to think that on Pick'em, I'm curious to see what the numbers will be, but I'm betting that on Winnipeg, you're going to see under 15%, if not under 10%. You're going to be in the vast minority, but hey, the fortune favors the bold. So if you get this, good on you, but I think you're going to whiff big time on that. But that's mm-hmm. my opinion. So you have Ottawa, Toronto, Hamilton, and Winnipeg. I have Montreal, Toronto, Hamilton, and Calgary. Let's see next week where we stand, and let's keep this fun going. I love doing the picks. I think it's a fun little thing to do.
Yeah, I didn't do them last year, but back in the game this year, and it is enjoyable to just see how you do each week, see how good your team knowledge is in the CFL each week.
Yeah, lots of fun. So we have some questions this week, Sir Michael. We get these all the time. We get, especially from certain people, we seem to get questions from the same people a lot of weeks. So let's start with the first one. It comes from Adam on the 3Down Nation comment section, and he asks, who do you think records more combined passing and rushing yards and touchdowns, Zach Collaros or Jeremiah Mazzoli? Given that Collaros may not return to the seventh game this year, this could be a lot closer than many expect, especially if Mazzoli gets short yardage sneaks and plays in garbage time once Collaros returns. So who do you think leads this team in combined yards, passing and rushing, and combined touchdowns, passing and rushing? Zach Collaros or Jeremiah Mazzoli?
I gotta go Collaros. You know, he's going to be out for 6-7 games, but then he's going to be in for hopefully the rest of the season, which should be 11-12 games. So I think that if he's the same Collaros that he was last year, he's going to put up big numbers, and he will be better than Mazzoli numbers wise by the end of the season. I just have to believe that. I mean, if he's not, and he plays all those games and he's not, then we might have a little controversy brewing, because if Mazzoli can put up bigger numbers than Caleros in just 6 or 7 games, he's had a hell of a 6 or 7 game start.
Yeah, I'm going to say Caleros as well. Austin has shown that he doesn't really go to his backup much in garbage time. This has been a criticism, especially amongst Ticat fans, especially last year when Caleros was in there in 30, 35, 40 point blowout wins way till the end. They were like, well, if you would have gotten Matthews in there earlier, he wouldn't have stunk as much when he actually had to start. So I do think it's going to be Caleros, although I do agree with Adam here. I do think that this is going to be a little closer than we expect, because I think that Mazzoli could see those sneaks. So maybe I think the yards is absolutely Caleros, because we didn't see Mazzoli run very much. We saw him stay in the pocket, and even when he rolled out against Toronto, he kept his eyes downfield. He wasn't looking to take off. Again, I think it shows that maturation in him as a quarterback, and I would much rather see him throw for 318 yards than to see him throw for like 186 and then rush for, you know, 97 or something. So I think we're going to see Caleros finish with yards. Touchdowns could be closer, but if Caleros picks up where he left off last year, even with missing 6 games, he might lead the league in touchdown passes. Like, this guy's amazing, and we saw that last year, and I think he's going to pick up right where he left off. This is not the only question we had about quarterbacks, and this is not the only question we had about Caleros and Mazzoli. A couple guys, Canes Eagles and Sean Smith, both got to us on Twitter and basically asked the same question, so I kind of melded them into one. And it's basically about the QB position and the battle that could rage on there. They both basically asked, is there any chance that Jeremiah Mazzoli stays the number one quarterback even when Zach Caleros is healthy?
Anything's possible. I don't see it happening. I think Caleros is the number one guy, no matter how well Mazzoli performs. They just signed this guy to a contract extension. He's going to be the highest paid player in the league starting next year. So, listen, I'm a big Mazzoli fan. I think that he's going to be a starter somewhere. I'm not sure it's going to be in Hamilton. I don't think it's going to be in Hamilton. But, I just don't see a scenario where Austin chooses Mazzoli over Caleros. I think as soon as Caleros is healthy enough, he will be the number one starter no matter what.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I think the only way that this is prolonged even longer than 6 games is if Zach Caleros is, say, 99% healthy and Jeremiah Mazzoli has this team at 4-2 or 5-1 and he's putting up, you know, 70% passing completions. He's putting up 300 plus yards a game. He's putting up 3 touchdowns per game. Like, he would have to basically repeat what he did against Toronto and do that for the rest of his time before Caleros is healthy, before I think we see any sort of possibility that Zach does not start this team. But I think that even then, all that would do is delay the inevitable. I think it could not force Caleros, but allow the team, hey, we're 5-1. We take an extra couple of weeks, take till Labor Day. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they could say to him, just keep going. We're fine. Whenever you come back, we're ready for you, but you don't have to rush it. And I think that's the only way that we see Mazzoli stay in, even when Caleros is quote unquote ready to return. But once he's fully healthy and it's like Zach's back, he's the guy. He's the man. Like you said, they just signed him to a massive contract extension. He's the guy. He's their starting quarterback. I hope Mazzoli keeps playing the way he is, but even if he does, Zach's going right back in there.
Yeah. Totally agree.
So our last question also comes from Canes Eagles, and his is about the kicking game. He asks, has Brett Maher put himself in the permanent kicker role as a replacement for Justin Medlock? We kind of talked about this in our game review, but yeah, what do you think?
Absolutely. If we're just going by one game, this guy has over and above exceeded expectations. I mean, we talked about it earlier, but the field goal kicking was phenomenal. The punting was great. Just to see him kick that 50-yarder made me feel so good, because that was the big question. He had low percentages from 45 and further. So to see him nail that 50-yarder, it just puts things, you know, you just don't worry about Medlock being gone, because this guy can do the job. So absolutely, he's the number one kicker going forward. I think that he's going to have a great season if you go by his first game, because it was just phenomenal.
Yeah, obviously anything could happen, and he could crap the bed in the next 3 games and they bring in another kicker. But if what we saw on Thursday is who this guy is going to be going forward, he's going to be the man here for a very long time kicking field goals. I am curious to see him kick at Tim Hortons Field in a high-pressure situation. He didn't really kick in any high-pressure situations in Toronto, but that's an outdoor stadium right off the lake. The wind is swirling. I'm curious. We know that Hamilton has one of the weirdest stadiums when it comes to wind, so I'm kind of curious what we could see out of him in this game. But if he comes in this week, he can, if he goes like 3 for 4 or goes perfect and you know, another couple beautiful punts and everything that we saw in Toronto, if he's even close to that, I think that we have found ourselves a kicker for this team. And I think it's one of those things where always in the back of my mind, because it's not Medlock, I think we're going to worry. But I think as if this guy keeps going forward, we're going to worry less and less and less about the kicking game.
Absolutely.
So that's it, Mike. We are done for the week. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or you can listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to be like Adam, Sean, and Kane's Eagles and ask us a question on Twitter, you can always hit us up there anytime. Mike, your Twitter handle pal.
Mike_Tykets.
You can find me at JoshSmith_82. And of course, Adam posted his question in the 3Down Nation comment section. You can do that there as well. So, for Podski Wee Wee this week, I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.